Hi, I'm Allison Kubo.
Hi, I'm Roger Goldman. Welcome to Mountain Money.
Being present is more than just a trendy catchphrase. In Present Company, Timothy Dukes and Michael Landers reveal how the art of presence can enhance your creativity, productivity, and engagement, ensuring that you enter any situation with confidence and a newfound awareness. Present Company is a wake-up call for us to take hold of the here and now. Here to talk about their straightforward approach to being present is Dr. Timothy Dukes and Michael Landers. Thank you for joining Mountain Money this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Fantastic. Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being here. So how did you two come together and discover this shared view of leadership?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Tim and I both have had our own practices, and mine tends to focus on culture and the cultivation of cultures. And Tim's was really working on presence and leadership. And we were brought together by a publicist who was working with us independently on our individual books. And we got together and started talking and kind of recognized that we both work with teams trying to derive conduits to high performance. And what that led to was this realization that, hey, if we kind of combined our two expertise, we might have an offering out there to help people continue to develop. And that's kind of what brought us together. And it kind of became a series of conversations that we had over a couple of years that we recorded, actually. And that led to this idea that we can cultivate cultures of presence, and that can lead to high performance.
So what do we mean when we talk about presence? Give us a little bit about the overall concept.
Yeah, and on its surface, it seems pretty simple, right? Just come back to here and now as people talk about it. But the reality is there's nothing easy about it. It takes a great deal of intention to show up. And we think that the greatest gift you can give someone, anyone, is your awareness, right? So you pay attention to them, you attune to them. And we found, particularly for leaders, high performers, that their tendency is to gather as much information as possible in any given moment. So think of being in the present moment is, if you will, as you hear what the people are saying or the person saying, you have a feeling for what's going on. You get a sense of where they're coming from, that your thoughts, your feelings are separate from your perception of their thoughts and their feelings.
So knowing that, you know, you're looking at it that way, you know, your book talks about people pay a high price when they're successful and not being present. So what keeps us from being there?
Yeah, what are some obstacles to presence, right? Well, one of the things that we're seeing in the pandemic, and we said this before, but it really kind of became exacerbated during the pandemic, and we're still seeing it important as hopefully we start to come out of this, is people are moving so quickly, and maybe some of your listeners can attest to this. I'm sure you definitely can attest to this, that there's not a lot of space between our moments. And pre-pandemic, if we had meetings or we were going to work, a lot of us had time to transition. And we've lost this permission to transition. And that has taken a high toll, I think, on all of us, because we're rushing in, either if we're in meetings, back-to-back meetings, if we're virtual. And we kind of lost this space to really move from one moment to another with more presence, right? What happens when we don't give ourselves permission to transition?
I thought I'd respond to that, Michael. It's Tim. The question had a second part to it. Like, what happens to people? They're successful. They excel in their careers, let's say, but they paid a price to get here, is what I heard. And you know what? I think leaders, business people, we all do the best we can in any given moment, but it's daunting what it takes to simply show up and be a high performer, you know, to hit every meeting, to keep a schedule, take care of family, yourself, etc. So what happens is, you know, incrementally, moment to moment, day to day, month to month, you know, things go on hold. We skip the morning walk. I definitely do this. I go for the potato chips before lunch, and then by the time I get the lunch, I'm not particularly interested. I'm probably the only one who does that, I'm sure. So the permission to transition, it's that you pause. You pause a moment, and you think about what's next, and you prepare yourself to make that transition. But you also look at what we would call opportunity cost. If I schedule one more meeting today, that means I have to skip my afternoon walk, or I'll be late for dinner. Or if there are children at home, I'm going to miss the game.
Yeah, and in that, I think when we are transitioning, right, talking about what we might miss, one tool that's helpful for me that Tim shared with me a couple of years ago was when you're entering into a space, be really mindful of what's already there.
Mm.
So typically when I go to a meeting, I'm thinking about me, right, and what I'm going to accomplish and what I need to get heard. But if I'm entering a space that's already there, what am I entering into, and what kind of culture already exists? So that's a mindful transition. And the other thing about the transitions that we're seeing is the greatest stress in our lives, our children's lives too, if their parents on the call here, happen in moments of transitions when we don't transition well. But that's where that stress comes from, because we're going from one context to another. And typically, most of us bring that context with us and might displace it into the space that we're entering into. Tim, we talk about that. I think we talk about that in the book about that the idea of frogs and trees. You want to share that story?
Mm, please.
Yeah. The you can imagine this, and many of us have experienced it. It can be in a team meeting, for example, or it can be dad coming home into the family unit from work, from the office or from the studio. I'm going to go with the executive, walks in late for the meeting, CEO of the company, comes in 5-10 minutes late, has a huge agenda, drops it right on everybody in that room with no sensitivity what was there before he or she arrived. And we have the image, it's like you drop a big boulder in a pond, and then you wonder why there's nobody, you know, sitting around paying attention. Well, they're all hiding up in the trees. Right? And it's that displacement and that driving of an agenda without a sensitivity to the culture and the context that we examine pretty thoroughly.
You know, one of the things that we've seen increasingly over the last, you know, 10 years in business has been the instinct of people in meetings to multitask, which seems to me like that would be the exact opposite of projecting presence. Has that been your experience, and what is your take on that?
Boy, that's a really good question. I can't tell you how many times that comes up. Literally, every meeting we seek agreements around, you know, are you willing to be here? The reality is we don't multitask. If you look at neuropsychology, we do this and then we do that. So let's say you're driving a car. Nobody drives a car and texts. You either drive the car or you text. Right? That's why it's a bad idea. So in a meeting, it's not comical, but it's, you know, what we tolerate in ourselves and one another, we normalize. So you'll see in a meeting the flashing of screens on a person's glasses or the feigning of paying attention. And what that is, it's like we reciprocate between this and that, not making a full transition to being here, but also not making a full transition to leading whatever it is that's compelling.
Yeah, and in that, it's always interesting, like, I see a couple of people do this in meetings, they're like, hey, everybody, no computers, you know, put your laptop down. Obviously, this is when we were in person, or put your phones away, right? I think teachers often do that with students these days. Put your phones away, no phones in the classroom. And there's a moment there, sometimes it's several moments, where people almost have some withdrawal of this parallel processing that they're trying to do, right? They feel, they're like, wait a minute, I have to actually listen to this person and talking, and, well, I have these other things on my computer that I want to look at, or I have my phone's blowing up or something. But it's a challenge. But once it happens, people really start to get used to it. They start to look at this space as, I only have to focus on one thing. So in that initial resistance, the thing that the result of it can be a sense of calming and comforting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be able to just focus on one thing, because how many things are we being asked to focus on in given moments? Think about all the things that want your attention. And if you can just go, nope, I'm only going to give it to this person. In some ways, that is a major gift, but for yourself, it might be like, oh, I don't have to do 10 things now. I can just do one.
So knowing that some of the people that you're talking to may not be ready to hear all of this information, and thinking about them and thinking about, you know, well, why can't I go into a meeting and get my agenda through? Because that's why I'm there. I'm there to get my job done. What's the difference? What's turning, you know, turning into being present? How does that help, you know, that person with that philosophy or the others of, you know, I'm so busy, I have to multitask. You know, what are they gaining when they do become present?
This is first of all, we're not saying that you can't enter in a meeting and get your agenda done. 100%. That's who we work with. We work with teams to be sure that they get their stuff done. They get their stuff done at a high, high level. But the cost isn't nobody wanting to work with them or getting burnt out or customers being unsatisfied, right? So one of the things that we're looking at is, so if you want to get your agenda done, great, you get it done, right? You have your intention. You share that with everybody. But can you take a moment to be mindful and look around and see, are people actually listening to you? Are they actually going to be listening to you? And that's where we're looking at small moments.
Yeah, and there are other people in the room, and there are other voices and other agendas and other assets within the corporate team or executive team, for example, that can be eclipsed by one voice. So what we look at in terms of team presence, there's an architecture to it. Simply put, you frame your participation. You know what your agenda is. You carry that agenda into the meeting, and then you execute that agenda. You keep it in collateral to everybody else that's in the meeting. And then to be able to do that is a skill set, something that you have to practice, something that you can cultivate. Because presence is a conduit for this type of delivery of outcome. And that conduit has to be in the context of everybody else on the team or in that moment.
To what extent do you see generational differences here? I can remember a few years ago, I took a younger associate to a meeting with me with a 60-some-odd-year-old CEO, and halfway through the meeting, which was pretty important for her and for me, she pulls out her BlackBerry or her phone or whatever it was and starts looking at it. Again, that notion being that from a generational perspective, sort of doing multiple things, going back to multitasking, was acceptable. But as a broader question, do you see differences in approach to the concept of presence between generations?
I think there tends to be more awareness of certain concepts. And I'll give you an example. I have a daughter, she's 11. But I think it was from kindergarten in our public school system here in California, she started having mindfulness classes. Okay, so from a very early age, she's kind of been introduced to this idea of mindfulness and breathing and kind of space and all those kind of things. And so if we flash forward to when she's a teenager and then maybe early in the workforce, there might be more and more expectations of kind of, you know, recognizing your impact on others in different ways than yourself. Now, pulling out the phone, yeah, I mean, that's just a tool that's been kind of, that's something that I'm used to. So there might be some education needed there in terms of what's appropriate or what the culture of certain meetings are, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we do see, though, I'll tell you, in particular with the young workforce, is there's less and less tolerance for toxicity in the workplace. That's a real thing we're seeing. And, and it comes back to how people treat each other. And it comes back to how people speak to each other. And it comes back to how people include or exclude each other.
Part of inclusion is the acceptance of people the way they are. So generationally, there's going to be a difference. But that judgment as part of the toxicity that is, I had a referral from somebody in London who was a very senior guy, and he's an old timer, and he was so successful, he had almost no turnover. And I asked him why one day. He said, you know what? Somebody comes to work for me, for the company, their career is what I focus on. I spend a good hour or two with them in the beginning, knowing what their goals are, and I support that, whether they stay with the company or not. However, here came another generation of people who would pick up that cell phone during a meeting. And that's a symbol of something, but to assume that that they're not paying attention isn't necessarily the case. I had an older son, and I called him out one time about this, and he said, looked at me like confused, like, what's my problem? He says, Dad, I'm just researching what you're talking about. Hmm.
So it's all about knowing or actually being in the situation, understanding how you felt about that, and then asking what was going on, which...
I think so, yeah, and that takes us to empathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was kind of saying in the culture work that I've done in the past, Nelson, which is get curious, not furious. I know it's a little corny, right? But I kind of live by it, right? And in those moments where you feel anger or frustration, are you able to pause and go, wait a minute, am I missing something? Is there something else? Now, maybe that person was looking on their Instagram feed, right? Okay, let's have a conversation. You know what? When we're in meetings with a CEO, no looking at your social media. If you're doing research on what they have, or could it wait? And I think the big thing there is, what impact did that person looking at their phone have on you, right? And then also on the person that they're speaking with. Because if that's not their intention, then they might think about shifting the behavior. So there's room there for education.
So as we wrap up this interview, can you let our listeners know, you know, again, the book is called In Present Company. What should a reader think about as they start to pick up this book?
Yeah, so the idea here is tips and tools. There's several self-assessments as well that are very easy to do, to look at and say, hey, can I bring this into my life? And I'll say to your listeners, you're all doing it right now. You all have the ability to become more present. And what the book does is just gives you some tips and strategies and guides and stories on how to do that. And it's broken down into kind of four powers of presence that really allows you to kind of digest them as you'd like. But we find people that just kind of start to practice it, and stuff, like I said, that you've probably done before in your life, it might have just kind of gone to the wayside a bit, will quickly bring you into connection with people and yourself.
We've been speaking with the authors of In Present Company, Michael Landers and Dr. Timothy Dukes.